All right, we are back to talk some more college football because it continues to change, which is really, really cool, man. And Brian Hartline, Brent, now the OC of Ohio State, I think, quote unquote, again. You know, I think at one point he was kind of calling plays. It's kind of been a mystery until like this year, like who was really calling plays. And then obviously Chip Kelly, we saw him up there in the booth the whole time, but. And then we're going to do a cool exercise of talking about some programs and some expectations. And then I think we're going to get to Nebraska today, right?
Yeah, hitting Nebraska. They're next up in our series. We were kind of going to maybe talk to their head coach, but that the timing didn't work out just yet. So we'll get to that at some point. But first, obviously, Hartline is now the OC at Ohio State. And it's one of those makes sense. And if you're going to keep as well as he is, as great as he is a recruiter, you have to elevate him in some way. Like I was actually, as someone that's a, you know, West Virginia fan, like I was thinking if they hired him for the head coaching job, I wouldn't have been upset. I would have been like, okay, let's see it. Because of the recruiting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at least you know that you would recruit at an elite level.
I mean, he's gotten all these receivers. I mean, he's gotten Jeremiah Smith, Abuka, Marvin Harrison Jr., Jackson Smith and Jigba, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson. Like, I didn't name a non-freakazoid receiver. So, obviously, you know, he's been able to really identify talent and get them. And so, you can tell he's got the smooth talking and he knows how to relate to kids. And obviously, that's a big part of it. But we'll be interested to see this offense because, again, last year – with Chip, the ability to morph and change. And obviously next year their offense will be very different too. I mean, breaking in a new quarterback, I think this system will be more of what you've seen from Ohio State in the past than what you saw this year. Don't you agree? Like, I think it'll be more to Ryan Day's typical past, throw happy, that's who they are. And if I had, you know, Jeremiah Smith, I'd probably throw it to him every play. So I wouldn't blame that, but I don't think it'll be the system you saw this year, especially, you know, cause you had Will Howard who could run the football so well.
Yeah. And like I said, I think it's just the natural progression for him. And I think he needed to do this because otherwise he's going to go somewhere else. If not, and given the responsibilities, you've got sort of that title in your back pocket to the Trump card of, hey, everything's okay. Remember, cause I can actually win the title. But, in terms of, money, they weren't done throwing out the money because Ryan Day got his new contract. He's now at $12.5 million a year.
Does that make him the second highest paid coach in football?
That is number two behind Mr. Kirby Smart.
Kirby.
Who is at 13.2. And right behind Ryan Day is at Dabo. Is
Lincoln Dabo's Riley? Nope, Dabo and then Lincoln, right? Lincoln Riley's in the top four.
He is Lincoln is sixth. Sark is fourth at 10.9. DeBoer fifth at 10.25. And then Riley at 10.1. So, but it kind of, by the way, it makes sense. The three coaches who have championships are the top three paid coaches. Kind of works out.
Well, and Mac Brown was the other, but Mac Brown retiring took him off the list. But yeah, now you have three people with championship rings. But you nailed it with Hartline. Like, if you don't promote guys, this is the problem with being good and having great guys on your staff. If you don't promote them, a lot of times they do go somewhere else. And that's part of it. But I would imagine Ryan Day will have his hand on there and he'll know what's going on with the Scarlet and Gray and he'll make sure that he's dialed into to the offense and it'll be fun to watch. But where are we going next, big homie?
So speaking of money, did you see how much the SEC divvied up amongst its teams? That would be a little over $800 million.
Okay. Well, there's more teams in the league now, though, right?
Yes. So it's so Oklahoma and Texas, since they were there half the year, they got $27.5 million. The other teams got $52.5 million each.
God bless America. Vanderbilt, everybody, like zero SEC wins, two SEC wins. That's the beauty of being in a great conference. That's why the ACC is like, please get me the freak out of here. Like trying to pull the ripcord and get out of that league because of the money. The difference between the money in the SEC and the Big Ten and everybody else is ridiculous. Like, it's absolutely crazy. They're not playing the same game. And that's why, you know, we could talk about this too, because the NCAA is going to have a meeting to review their awful rules that they suck at anyways. But
that's next.
Huh?
That one's next. That's next.
Yeah, I mean, so, but like, this is something that I'd be mad at too if I was other schools. It's just, it's not, it's a competitive advantage. It's very much a competitive advantage to have a way bigger budget every single year, just being a part of a conference. They don't have to earn anything. Like, there is no earning. Yeah,
here you go.
I'm signed in. I'm into the conference. You have your Big Ten network. You have your SEC network that makes a gazillion dollars for my school. So obviously, huge advantage when you're a part of that.
ACC's TV contract still goes for like another 11 years, I think.
That's one of the worst contracts in the history of sports that they all signed. Like, to get that passed through, it is absolutely amazing. I don't – and closely behind that, when it comes to television network stuff, is CBS getting rid of the SEC game. Like
– ding, ding. Like
– the stupidest thing in the history of the world. You've got the most prominent conference with the best viewership in the country consistently, and you let it go? Like, that was – one of the dumbest things you ever could have done. I mean, everyone sat on their couch and was like, CBS, 3:30, like appointment television. And it was Gary Danielson. It was Nussmeier, Nestler. And you were literally ready to rock and roll. And now it was weird, by the way, seeing them on a different thing. But now they're getting
very odd.
Other games, not that game that was so big, so pivotal. You knew the theme music. You remember Todd Blackledge and Vern Lundquist. Like, you could go back as far as you wanted to of how awesome it was. And you gave that away. Like, that was one of the dumbest business decisions you could possibly make.
Yeah, that one's still mind-blowing. All right, so you mentioned the third topic, and then we'll get into Nebraska before we hit the last thing. Rules committee. Meeting up later in the month, gathering and looking at number one on the list, the faking of injuries. What was the term? I think feigning of injuries.
Yeah.
Was that feigning injuries was the terminology that I saw. So happy with that. Yay. Nay. That's a good thing.
I think everybody can agree that it's very annoying. It slows the game down, which is what we don't want. I just don't know, Brent, how you legislate it. Like, I'm not sure how you're going to be. Now, listen, we can see when they're obvious, but at the same point, it still becomes a player's, you know, health and safety, which is obviously on the front, you know, front burner all the time. And you're always thinking about concussions and all those different things. So, you know, deeming an injury, how would you deem it a fake? How would you get, like, are you giving out a yellow card? Like, is this soccer? We're giving out yellow cards and red cards, you're kicked out. Like, you sold the piss out of that. That was bull crap. Like, I'm not buying it. Yellow card. Like, oh, okay. It's a warning. I mean, I think how do you manage this is going to be important. Cause I don't know how you legislate that, because it's got to be an opinion. And a lot of times we have the benefit of a replay. So we watch as you know, you watch it slow down and you watch the sideline, man. It's like, hey, you take your fall, right? Like, and you see guys do it over and over again. But I think, as a ref that's got all these things to look at and play clocks and substitutions and counting guys, now you're going to ask them to, okay, monitor the flopping, monitor the fake injuries. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how it gets solved I don't know how they solve it. I really don't know the answer to the issue unless you're going to flag people when it's obvious. But I think then people would be like, okay, let's make sure this is not super obvious. Let's make sure it's after a play and when you're already down or something like that. I mean, maybe just the egregious ones you find a way to handle or not.
Yeah. And Chris Vanini's article in The Athletic, they talked about a proposal that was you're out for the drive and then you can buy them back into the game with a timeout. You'd have to use a timeout to get that person who did that. So, but like you said, it's determining that is still hard, because what if a guy like legitimately gets like a shock thing where it's like, ooh, that hurt, my hip hurts right now, that's bad and I got to get out. But then I go to the sideline and after that sort of initial shock, you're like, okay, I'm good. I can go back in the game. That's what's hard. I do think maybe replay would potentially get involved, but then you're
slowing the game down,
which is that was not good either. Others, things that were on the docket I saw were coaches challenge model, kind of like the NFL with replay stuff. I don't know how much I like that versus what they do now. I will say this. In terms of game speed, the NFL has it figured out compared to college football.
Much better. You know,
it's going to, for the most part, it's going to be 3 hours. College football can go forever and a day longer. So I think that's fine, whatever you get to that clock. Because I think the clock thing, like, it wasn't really an issue. There were less plays, I think, maybe on average. I need to look at the exact numbers. But it was really close.
Mr. PFF.
Come on, Mr. I didn't look at nationwide numbers to see like average game numbers and things like that, but still yet there. So yeah, that's sort of news.
Hold on, didn't I see something about overtime rules too?
Yes, I think that was, and I think the timeouts. I'm sure that might be the Kirby Smart rule, where he saw what Georgia Tech lined up at and then took a timeout every.
See, that's the kind of stuff to me. Like, hey, NCAA, you kind of stink at your job. Like, I don't give a crap about overtime games that very rarely happen. And obviously, 8 overtime games with Georgia and Georgia Tech, that's not going to happen very often. Like, can we address targeting? That would be great.
Where was that? Yeah, where was that one?
Like, this is not hard. Now, it's hard with the injuries to me. That is extremely difficult to monitor. I'm not going to lie. I don't know the fix. I can fix targeting. I can fix that in 10 seconds. Flagrant 1, flagrant 2. Like, you are not kicked out of the game for targeting. Like, you are kicked out if it's, like, clearly malicious and you use the top of the dome and you destroy somebody and that's the way you do it. Otherwise, like, I don't need to review this. This needs to be addressed. It needs to be discussed. Kids are working way too hard to get kicked out of games and to miss opportunities. And so I would even go as far, too, like, let's get rid of the suspension for the next game. If it's a flagrant 2, you're suspended for the next game. If it's a 1, you stay in the game. It ain't that big of a deal. So I really don't think that's
extreme. Do you know? I don't know, but do you know anybody on the rules committee? Maybe you can get an invite. Hey, as a former concerned viewer of the sport and former player.
So you suck at your job. Have figured this out. Like that.
Just as long as they don't listen to that part, the part you said that, about that.
I mean, but it just has to get figured out because so many games you see that's such an issue and it's awful. It's very frustrating. And you can't tell me that it's legislated the same all the time because that's hard to legislate too. An easy fix is that if an offensive player changes his level, if an offensive player is a moving target and ducking, it's not targeting. If an offensive player is defenseless and gets striped, it's targeting. Like, but when he's a ball carrier and he's got this wiggle and he's fast and you're asking me to get that guy on the ground, you come make that flipping tackle. Like,
yeah,
it's not easy. Like
the one that really bothered me this season, obviously covering Georgia, so watching all their games, the Dan Jackson tackle against Texas,
it
was just a good solid tackle. It happened really fast. Like, no, that was one. Hey, I didn't think.
If you want to change an overtime rule, how about you change that we have to walk to the other side to run a play? Because that was stupid. That wasted more time than the timeouts. Because if you remember the 8 overtime game, like Georgia did theirs, and then whoop, let's walk all the way to the other side of the field. Now you run yours. Oh, wait a minute. Let's go to the other side of the field. And I get it. I understand. Yeah. It's the home crowd, the student section. It's the technical advantage you get to it. 1 overtime, you play that side. 2nd overtime, you both play the other side. Like, we don't have to do this back and forth. That was a bigger waste of time to me than the timeouts.
Yeah, that was not good. And maybe one of these days wind would come into an issue there, kicking, all that sort of stuff. But no, just stay in one place. All right, so we started with Tennessee, looking at them on Tuesday. So today we're going to kind of go a little more off the radar, not a sort of non-college football playoff team, and see if the steps that Coach Matt Rhule made in year 2 plus 2 wins, he went from 5 and 7, what it was, 5 wins in year 1 to 7 and 6 last year. They won a bowl game, first time in a while. The previous 7 years, they'd averaged 4 wins. They won the Pinstripe Bowl. And by the way, do you remember their last 9-win season at Nebraska? That would be 2016.
Was that Magic? Was that
was Mike Riley?
Yeah.
In terms of QB, I think you're right.
Yeah.
And then the last 10-win season was 2012 with Bo Pelini. So, who
and
you
know? Dominican too.
Yeah. Like.
What was that? Or was he before that?
He was.
No, Dominican too was before that. He was
well
Colt
before
McCoy.
That, I think. Yeah. Yeah. And really, when you, what's you know they started 5-1, tough loss to Illinois, and then outside of the Indiana beatdown, which was an absolute beatdown, like almost 50-point beatdown, everything was close. I mean, they had Ohio State beat for
goal line stand.
Yeah, outside of that, and lost their defensive coordinator to Florida State. My man Red Bull Dana Holgorsen is now OC. Full time.
Well, and that happened last year during the season. And yep. Dana Holgorsen came in for the last several games. And I think that's a, I think that was a good thing. Like, the one thing I like about Dana Holgorsen is Dana Holgorsen, like, he's not coming in with a menu that's 75 pages long. Like, he's got his
rectangular
piece of,
about that.
Yeah. he knows who he is. He knows what he is. And I think the thing that's cool about guys like that is, like, they're not going to run a lot, but they're going to be really good at it. And, like, they practice against the different looks, but the same plays, a lot of different plays that they can run. A lot of times they do tempo. Raiola, obviously, is the big story to me in this offense. Yep. Like, he's the guy. You know, he's the one that showed you flashes in the beginning of the season that, he's got the mannerisms of Mahomes a little bit. He's got the
that's
got
to stop.
I know the comparison has to stop, but he's got the mannerisms, the hair a little bit. Like, obviously, the same coach, the same quarterback coach. So a lot of that carry over. But here's the thing: he's the best Nebraska quarterback in a long time. That I know. Yes. Like, true freshman, gaining experience. He was not dialed in by any stripe of the imagination. He's not a finished product, but I do see enough arm talent.
He was solid.
Huh?
He played solid. Like, he was just a solid quarterback for them all season. Didn't completely kill them. Didn't, you know, elevate in some in crazy ways, but just played really solid and as well as I think you could for a true freshman when you got to carry a lot, when you have to do a lot for an offense and you don't have weapons galore.
Well, that's the thing. They didn't have the typical run game that they're used to having in the past. And to couple that, like, the playmakers out wide, not upper echelon winning all the time. So, and listen, he made a lot of mistakes. I mean, he definitely made mistakes. And the one thing you see with a young quarterback that I think he did a lot too, didn't know when to get rid of the football. Didn't know the answers to the test. And a lot of times, the Illinois game, I remember when they lost that game, I'm like, just throw the ball away. Like, yeah. Okay, overtime, when he runs backwards.
He missed the one throw. He missed the one big throw.
Yeah, he did
in that game.
And he had a couple of games where he missed throws and guys that were open that you'll expect him to take that next step. But to me, it was more about running into sacks or running away from things and going backwards and taking those negative yardage plays. When I think, like, as you get more experience, you start to know the answers to the test and the ball comes out. And again, just like we talked about with Nico the other day, he's young, he's inexperienced. Those are the things that you learn, and you only learn by one way. By screwing it up. You only learn by seeing it and playing. And for them, he got good playing time, got good minutes. And you're right. Every game was really competitive. Every game was close except for the 50-point beatdown from Indiana, which that was still embarrassing. And that's when you thought the wheels could fall off. But I like the response from them too, though, because immediately take care of business. You know, I think they beat Rutgers after that and Purdue, right? Or something like that. Like, or was that before that?
No, Ohio State was right after that. It came back.
That's right. They wanted like a 4-game skid, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They 1-5 to finish.
Huh?
1-5. They finished 1-5 before the bowl game win.
Yeah.
In terms of the portal, though, they did lose a lot of bodies, not necessarily a ton of snaps and contributors. I think the number was 31 that I saw. Some edge guy, you know, James Williams, had a good bit of sacks, went to FSU. Running back, Dowdell, went to Kentucky. But in terms of if you have a young quarterback like that, recruiting class was actually pretty good. 19th overall, 6th in the Big Ten. And they went and got some proven commodities at receiver. Dane Key coming from Kentucky, who to big me, dude, actually, his game fits with Raiola's game perfectly in terms of the brain working together. You know, I don't want to say Mahomes Kelsey, but Key is very much a Kelsey, really great possession receiver. But if you get that to where you work on the same page with that type of guy, okay, now you have a guy. And then you get the Hunter kid from Cal, who was Cal's leading receiver, more speed. So now you actually have some weapons that, all right, let's go make some plays. And then they got better along the offensive line. Elijah Pritchett from Bama.
Hey, so before you go to the offensive line,
okay,
you said don't do that with Mahomes, and then you said Mahomes and Kelsey.
Well, because it's hard not to make the daggone comparison with the kid. Like, the looks part. The mannerisms drive me insane.
Type combination right here, baby.
Just don't do the mannerisms and the celebration stuff, all those things. Yeah, don't do that, please. But you got Pritchett from Bama at right tackle, Spindler from Notre Dame along the offensive line, and then they went and got an interesting player is the Williams Inwanery kid from that was like a top 10 type recruit that went to Missouri that, you know, Drinkwitz had a video of him like jumping up and down and hugging guys like crazy when he signed with Missouri or picked Missouri, but he didn't really play at all. I mean, it was less than 100 snaps, if that, less than 50 maybe. And he put himself in the portal.
And by the way, that's Nebraska. The part that's hard about today's college football, because if you go pay a guy and you get a top recruit, guess what? If he doesn't play, it's your fault. It's not his. It's your fault. Yep. And then, okay, well, this sucks. And guess what? I get to leave. I get to go. So it stinks, man, for these guys that when you recruit and you pour so much time into them, and then because of the rules of the transfer portal, it's like, okay, I can just dip, right? Like it doesn't matter. I can leave.
You didn't play me a lot, so I am going to dip, kind of thing.
Yeah, and the thing about that is you kind of rob the kids of that development and that adversity, right? Like I think – that adversity hits you in the mouth of like, gosh, I need to fight. Like, I got to figure it. Whatever it is, I've got to figure it out to contribute to this team. And when you take that away and you can be like, all right, I'm getting screwed. It's the coach's fault. Now I can leave. I think it waits another year before you get it. And that's the part of the game that's the part of the transfer portal I don't like. I do love when kids get opportunities to play when they wouldn't have opportunities to play, but I just don't love like quickly saying I'm out, peace. You know, it just, think there's some lessons that could be learned.
All right. So before I get into the big, I guess, question of this, because we've already kind of hit Olgerson and Raiola. The biggest thing for me where I think Nebraska could, now the question on the screen there, can they make the playoff? That might be a stretch, but can they jump to a, say, 9-win team, another plus two in the category? I mean, by the way, you look at Rule with his third year at Baylor. That's when they won, in the conference championship, went 11-3.
Yeah. 10 plus wins, usually the third year. Temple, he did it too, didn't he?
Yes. But the big thing for me is their schedule sets up. They got Cincinnati in a neutral site game. I think that's in the Kansas City area, which, by the way, a lot of their recruiting has been in that area too. And then Akron, Houston Christian, whatever.
Who the heck is that?
Whatever level of football is. I'm assuming that's an FCS opponent.
I didn't know that.
But then they get Michigan. They get Michigan at home. And if you look at their schedule, there were five teams in the Big Ten a year ago that had double-digit wins. So that Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, Penn State, and Illinois. They only play Penn State this year. Only one of those teams is on Nebraska's schedule. And they get Michigan and USC at home. They got to go to Penn State. But the schedule,
and let's be honest,
positive.
We know what Penn State is. Penn State's program is going to be good. Like they're going to be in the mix. They have been for years and years and years. I think Indiana's a little bit more of a crapshoot to figure. Like they've got a lot to replace and replicate, which I think is going to be really, really hard to do. Just like you saw with Florida State a year ago. Like you can take those portal guys, but that doesn't mean it's always going to work in your favor. But yeah, that's a good schedule. Nebraska fans should be excited. They have their quarterback. My question is, do they have their coach? Is Matt Rhule the guy? Like we've seen We've seen a lot there, like a lot of guys that they've tried over and over again. Is Matt Rhule, you know, we saw the Baylor, we saw the Temple, but we also saw Carolina. And I can tell you this, I love Matt Rhule as a dude. He is an awesome dude. Like, he's made of all the right stuff. He says the right things. He knows how to lead men. He's got some intensity to him, man, that I really, really love. I'm a big Matt Rhule fan. I think that job is a tough job. I think it's hard. I think you think Nebraska and you think championships, a lot of us growing up, and obviously the newer kids don't think that. But I do think the NIL helps. I do think being able to get guys in the transfer portal does help. But, you know, you also – Matt Rhule's a guy that's done an elite job of developing guys over the years, and that's what I admired about Baylor. Like, he took guys, and in 2 and 3 and 4 years, like, you saw the bodies change, man. Like, get –
turned into
up,
NFL players.
Yes, get bigger, get stronger, develop them into the NFL. That's why that dude don't want a spring game, cuz. Because he don't want you looking at his roster before it gets to that point, because that's what he does. He does a great job of that, and he's going to take guys and develop them. So I think
I mean, you see, like, you think, hey, this guy's been here for – this is his third year here. I think he's about ready to pop, kind of thing. And – you'd say, all right, I don't want this guy being showcased because somebody's going to come and offer him a bag. And you don't want that because you want to keep your guy who you've spent 1, 2, potentially even 3 years going.
Well, apparently he's a big Kenny Chesney fan too, because we got a picture of him up with Kenny Chesney. So
I haven't been called that one yet. So he does share my affinity for lack of hair. Lack of hair.
That's it. Hey. And he's short. That's the only two things y'all got in common, though. I know Kenny. I've known Kenny for years. That's the only things y'all got in common.
Vertically, we're both vertically challenged. Unfortunately, not blessed in that area. So do you think they get the 9 wins? I'll say 9, because 10 puts them in the, you know, especially if they beat, you know, if they beat a Michigan and a USC and they're at 10 wins or something somehow. I don't think they're getting there, but can they get the 9 and be an interesting team and maybe make a Penn State, make some of these other teams in the Big Ten sweat a little bit?
If you asked me this question, like 4 games into the season last year, I'd have said absolutely. But like that skid, they lost to UCLA. They lost to USC. Like they lost to Iowa. What, like 13-10? Like, only Iowa can beat you mathematically by something like that. Like, so I can't say yes. I think they're going in the right direction, but like that was a very frustrating skid early in the year, man. We were on the train and we were on the hype and I thought they were going to be better than they were, but Riola, obviously the portal adds, the development is going to give them one more win at least. 2 more wins. So, I mean, they're going to be right there in the mix, but I can't say yes. I would have said yes if we'd have kept something together, but the wheels on the bus definitely fell off for a little bit. And they had to stop on the side of the road and get a fix a flat and put some air in there. Cause it was bad.
And Ross says that you're dropping the axe on me, that I'm some sort of poor guy. It's okay. I'm very much used to that. These are normal conversations here, Ross. But that's what's hard for a program like Nebraska now, where you obviously, by the way, they got 6 of the top 7 recruits in their state, but it wasn't like their state is loaded with D1 talent. Like, there was more D1 talent on, you know, the 2 teams in the state championship in Georgia than there was in their entire state of Nebraska. Yeah. So, but still yet, because of that, where did Nebraska previously recruit and get a lot of those big-time guys they had? California, oftentimes. You don't see that as much. And then, two, it puts so much pressure on the quarterback. And, by the way, Riola wanted it. That's, you know, he was committed to Georgia and then Ohio State, then Georgia, and then went to Nebraska. But that's on his shoulders. And if he takes that leap, they'll be fine. And his dad's there. All the family's there. All the history.
His dad played there. His uncle coaches there. Like, there's a lot of symmetry there, but Brent, those days of them recruiting nationally and in California and getting top dogs, those were also when they were really the only dog. They were on television every week, and they were kind of, you know, America's team in college. And those days obviously are gone, so it's more difficult. But again, schedule purposes, you know, you got Penn State, that's going to be, a tough game. Here's the thing, though. Minnesota's always good. Like, they always have a good, formidable team. Obviously, Michigan's going to be good. Obviously, USC will be a challenge. But they've got to grow and develop a lot because the consistency obviously wasn't there from this squad. But you're right. The only game that was really, really bad was the Indiana game. The Ohio State game was respectable, but I'm curious to see Michigan. I can't wait till we do this on Michigan because I'm fascinated with Michigan next year and what they'll be. But let's get
Michigan
on to the next
comes one. Up in our next in our last conversation, which I think is going to be a fun conversation because it can kind of go anywhere. So I went it with the topic of coaches with the most to gain,
okay,
in 2025, and that can kind of, you know, be taken a lot of different ways. But to me, I went sort of with two buckets of my five. I went at of these five guys that we most to gain. So I went in sort of two realms, legacy or cementing the I'm the guy status. So how do you want to roll with this? You want me to shoot mine and then you go yours, or how are we doing, back and forth?
Well, give me one guy that, not legacy, but give me one guy that,
okay,
like has the most to gain.
So since I screwed up the 1 to 5 last time in our top five that I see all over the place, I'll go number five. That would be Coach Prime.
Really?
Deion Sanders.
Okay.
Because no Shador, your son's not there. No Travis Hunter, no number one recruit in the country that was, you know, Heisman Trophy winner. They're gone. How serious of this are you? If you go and you have a very solid season again, and you're an 8-9 win team, and you're competitive all year, and you're just close, and you're showing that you even improve, maybe, or you're showing that you're building something, whatever that may be. That to me, that's a big thing for me because that shows that all of this was real and not just something he's done for the past 5 years while his son was there, kind of thing. As much as the effort and the time and all the things he's put into it, I don't want to diminish that at all, but it's still a thing. And if he just bails after his son goes, then it's not a good look.
Yeah. And I think I can get down with this. I like the way you spun this. I think it's good because, now I don't know that the expectations were really high a year ago, but they put a good winning streak together and they were in the Big 12 hunt. Like,
yeah.
And they remain in the Big 12 hunt because I know Arizona State's going to be there. Like, I know without a doubt Dillingham and Arizona State are going to be there. And with Shador being gone, with Travis Hunter being gone, can you construct a roster too? Because it's total roster construction and development. They struggled at the quarterback spot. They brought in the second best recruit in the country. Like, in the country, in Julian Lewis. Juju. Yeah, Juju. Lewis. Is an animal. Like, this dude is a freaky. Everybody wanted him at quarterback. Everybody in the country wanted him. So you've got your next face of your franchise, but he's not going to be. Shador came with experience, right? And took some lumps and got better. This guy's coming straight out of high school into your system. So I kind of like that. I can get down with the prime time because he does have something to prove. And
like, to me, if they go out and have another solid season or keep showing signs that, hey, we're a real program, we're here to stay kind of thing, that's a big deal for me with him. And that's one where maybe an NFL team then after that says, hey, look, we see that it's legit. Now we want you to come coach our NFL team. Anyway, that's my first one. Who you got?
Well, let's keep going. I like it because we'll go up your list.
Okay. We'll go. So four is Cerrone Moore at Michigan. Because you beat Ohio State already, yes, but you took a step back, and now you've got your, $10 million quarterback or something like that?
Bryce, it's Underwood, right?
Yeah, like top recruit, the guy, you know, one of your biggest booster guys, and Michigan fans took care of business for you there, Mr. Portnoy. So – can you take that and cement your status as I'm the guy at Michigan? So that's four for me, as Cerrone.
I like that. And I wrote him down on my list too, so I'll just keep adding to it. They were a quarterback away this year. Like, defense very much kept him in games. A lot of these guys now a big draft class last year. This year is going to have a lot of these guys going out the window. The Will Johnsons, the Grahams in the middle, like the Mason Grahams in the middle, like several defensive tackles actually will get drafted probably in the first round. And they severely underperformed and couldn't find an identity, you know, kept switching quarterbacks. Was it as simple as that? You know, is that the easiest thing? Because here's another thing too. The further you get away from your culture setter, the more the culture gets ruined a little bit.
You.
Jim Harbaugh is unbelievable culture guy. And I don't know how he does it. Brent, I've been around him I don't know how many times, and he's one of the quirkiest, strangest individuals I've ever met in my life. Like,
by the way, do you see the post-game stuff and they sing "For He's a Jolly Good Fellow"? Like, that's like it's
and I think about that kind of stuff in the locker room, and I'm like, no, like, shut up. I don't want to hear that crap. But you got NFL guys buying into it like crazy because, again, if you're a coach and you show me who you are and you do it consistently, I'll believe it. But I think he set that culture of toughness. He built that foundation. Can Sherrone Moore keep it going? That's a hard thing to do. Like, you've got to have that identity of yourself and be able to do it. And that's to be determined. But let me tell you what I loved. The end of the Ohio State game. Not just kind of like, yeah, we lucked into it. He was over there like, boom, shooting arrows across the field, right? Like, relishing it. And I am here for that. I love that swag. So I think it's very doable. They're going to lose a lot of talent, but Michigan's been recruiting really, really well. And the quarterback spot might be in really good shape with the number one recruit, mm-hmm. I think, the best quarterback in the country that, got paid $12 million. So
a lot, whatever.
Watch your franchise quarterback.
Third for me was Billy Napier. Because quite honestly, I didn't think he'd be here. I thought the schedule would doom them and would doom him in his job status, but it didn't. And they found themselves and they found some victories and they definitely found a quarterback. And now he's got his guy at quarterback. Now the schedule's not any easier because it's basically the same. And it's very, very difficult. Hey, I think they have like most of the national title odds. They have like half.
Have that schedule ready. But let me say this. It's interesting you say the most to gain, because I almost feel like I could spin that too, because they got so much momentum this year. And even though they lost a lot, they finished on a 4-game win streak, right? I think they finished winning at least 4 in a row, beat Ole Miss, kept them out of the playoffs.
Yeah, 4 in a row, including the bowl.
Yeah, including the bowl. And then honestly, the Georgia game could have been better if not for the quarterback spot and Lagway being hurt. They beat LSU, who was another, you know, quality team. They went to overtime against Tennessee, and they easily could have beaten Tennessee. So, like, Brent, it was really close, and they were 8-5, I think. I think that was their record.
Yeah.
So they could have all this momentum and next year be 8-5, but it's going to feel totally different because they started so bad, and it was like, man, we suck. We're out of here. We're going to do a Florida State, which Florida State went in the tank and basically quit. But Florida rallied. They fought. You know, Billy Napier's already said he's going to be calling plays, so he'll be the OC again next year. He's got DJ Lagway. Like, they looked good on the line of scrimmage last year on the offensive line. They had an identity on offense. Lagway showed scrambling, big arm, toughness, you know, getting hurt and coming back. So I think the expectations for Florida is going to be really high. But go ahead and talk me through that puppy, because that schedule, that ain't fun, bro.
No, not one bit, not in the slightest, because it's at LSU. It's at Miami is maybe not as, at least from an environment standpoint, not there. Texas at home, at A&M, Georgia, at Ole Miss, Tennessee. Like that's just, it's still there. Yep. And they're not obviously not going to be as bad as they were this past season. You wouldn't think, at least.
But so,
my third.
It was fun to watch Billy Napier keep that thing together last year. And I think now the expectations will be higher like they were when he started. And it'll be interesting to watch, you know, how good this team could be. Cause it definitely seems like there's elements in place that you should be cheering for. And if you're a Florida fan, happy you got.
when it's one of those, when, and for me, like most of gain, like if Lagway truly is a big time difference maker and you now are a 10-2 team with that schedule, you're in the playoff.
Oh, 100%.
Or you're, and maybe even 9-3, depending on how the rest of college football looks.
Yeah. Cause you'll be battling with teams. I think you're going to be, you'd be battling with teams that you had probably beaten, because I think, you know, you're going to have Tennessee in the mix. You're going to have Georgia in the mix. You're going to have Texas in the mix. Like Miami's probably going to be in the mix in the ACC. So you'll have several teams on your resume that will be resume boosters that will be good. And that's not even counting A&M and Ole Miss. So there's plenty of landmines on that schedule.
All right. Last two are 2-1 or legacy kind of things for me. And just, and I think more about these two guys is, can you win it all? So two was Dabo. Because to me, if he goes with Klubnik returning and, you know, you already put him in your top five kind of thing, they go win it all. Like, that's the ultimate mic drop for Dabo. In all this era of craziness, my what I do works. And it did the trick, that sort of thing. So he's two. And then one is James Franklin.
Well, hold on. Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. All right. That's incredible. I like the James Franklin. Dabo, obviously there for a different reason, but I think Dabo's lost the luster and people now question whether he is that guy. Dabo has two championships. Kirby has two. Like, those are that's the list of active coaches that have two. Like, they are in a league of their own, not wanting to adapt to the portal, but adapted to the portal a little bit. Not having a QB, finally got his QB. Not having receivers for a little while, finally got the receiver. So I think you're seeing a lot of the ingredients that made Dabo and company successful, I think, are starting to come back into place. And that's why he's smiling like that on that picture, because he's got the guy behind him. And I think that this year is going to be a big year for Clemson. And by the way, they open with LSU.
Yes.
Like that's in the real Death Valley. I don't know which Death Valley it is, but it's in the real Death Valley. It's one of the two, or is it a neutral game site?
Yeah. I actually haven't looked. I need to look.
I haven't looked at that either. But obviously both, I say that because they're both Tigers. They're both called Death Valley, their stadiums. So I'm sure one of them claimed to be the real Death Valley and the other one's the copyright. But yeah, I like the Clemson one on there. Before you get to your first one, some guys that I had on the list. What do you think about this? Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
Did you have him near your list? That's a really good one.
I just went with my five that I came to my mind first. I didn't think sort of anything else after that.
Yeah.
And I like him because that he's kind of, like you said, just it's kind of a little bit of here in terms of that list, but is there something in the tank? And now you got quarterbacks galore there.
You got quarterbacks, which is, again, they were competitive last year, but you look up, they don't go to a bowl game. They have two conference wins. So, like, it was obviously a disappointment, but the recruiting's been good for Hugh Freeze. And so I think
a big time receiver.
Yes. I mean, I think that they've got a chance to hopefully make some noise. And I think Hugh's a great guy. I think he's a really good coach, too. I think he's one of those guys that is, you know, once he got into the SEC, he was like, holy cow, like, this is a different world. Because it is, from a recruiting standpoint, once he got back in it and the Wild Wild West, it officially occurred, he was like, these things have changed a little bit since I was in it. And Liberty's a totally different animal. So I think it took some time to – trust me, totally different animal. Some time, I think, to adjust. But I think Hugh Freeze was a guy that I put on there. Another guy I had on my list before we get to your number one, Brent Venables.
Yeah. Great call.
Because you know, Venables is a guy that has coached great defenses. Now, listen, remember, Jeff Levy was his OC. They were really good on offense. Dylan Gabriel was there. Dylan Gabriel leaves. Jeff Levy goes and becomes the Mississippi State head coach. You hire Seth Luttrell. That didn't work. You fire him. And now I think it's interesting because you brought Ben Arbuckle in from Washington State. I think it was probably a dual purpose reason of why you bring him in, because you got the best transfer quarterback in the country with Mateer. And so I think like you've got the QB, which is huge, the familiarity with the system, but let's not sugarcoat that offensive line. It was terrible. The receivers were hurt like crazy. The run game was non-existent. That was a tough watch. Like, to watch their offense last year was really, really tough. And their
schedule doesn't get any easier because it's the same.
No, and pull that up, because I think that will be big. But I think this is a big year for Brent to show people, like, you know, can they get that side figured out and the defense with the defense, because he always does. He's the play caller, man. Like, he's so good. Yeah. And the reason he was so good at Clemson and the reason he's so good now is because he's got infinite energy and he's just so passionate. He cares so much. And again, you take on the persona of your coach. Like, the players are going to play on edge when your coach is on edge. And he's one of those guys that has that. And I think, you know, with OU next year, I think it's a pretty big year.
Who also plays Michigan, by the way. In addition to their SEC monster, they get Michigan. That's amazing.
Good thing is they get Ball State and Temple. Obviously, they got Auburn again.
So Illinois State, Temple, Kent State. There's three dubs. Yep. Outside of that, I can't give them one definitively.
No, because they got Texas, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Tennessee. Like, it's Alabama again. Missouri,
gauntlet.
Like LSU, like, that's tough, man. Like, that's not easy. And again, when they came into the league, they got screwed. Let me be very clear. Like, they got screwed with the schedule. You can say whatever you want. Texas got a joyful entrance into the SEC. Oklahoma
nice
got a
basket.
Yes, it couldn't be any more on this side of the page. So it's a big year for Venable next year. Offensively, let's see how this, you know, how this shows up, because it's definitely going to be, I think the defense is always going to be very competent and very good.
Yep. So who else is on any others on your list
that we didn't get to? Yeah. I wrote down Mike Norvell, but you wrote down Mike Norvell, didn't you?
No, I did not have him.
I'm interested to see Florida State bounce back.
It's a bounce back. Yep.
Yeah. Bounce back. So I put Norvell, and then I wrote down a sneaky one, Brian Kelly. You go to 9-4. I kind of just.
Yeah. If you fade into this, where you're this all the time, and you keep getting the QBs that they're getting and the weapons they have, like, yeah, that.
Well, and I thought with Brian Kelly too, like the end of the game, so many times being close and coming up, not coming through with the play and making those plays or getting that stop. Like, you've seen it so many times over his first, you know, several years in Baton Rouge. I think he's a good coach, and they've recruited really well this year, like, especially portal and additions. And so I think they should take that next step, and they should be one of those teams that we're saying LSU should be in the playoff hunt every year. Like,
yes,
it's not debatable. You have the in-state talent that's almost one of the best in the country. There's no other people you're really competing with. Like, that's a great job. That is an elite job. He left Notre Dame to take that job because it was a better job. And I just did air quotes if you weren't watching. It was a better job because he wanted to play in those big games and play against comp where he had equal comp. I want to hear your James Franklin. I want to hear this part. So,
so for me, the way I looked at this, most to gain of the four remaining teams in the playoff this year, he's the only one who has his quarterback back. And, you know, it's kind of that it's time. You've got your quarterback back. You just stole the defensive coordinator from your biggest rival.
National championship team.
National championship team. You get Oregon at home. You got to play Ohio State again at their place, but, like, your schedule's set up very nicely. Like, this is the year. This is if you go run the gauntlet and put this into a championship type team, that to me, like, you cement yourself into a whole different echelon of coach and how he's looked at. Does that mean, like, they're going to, if it doesn't go well, or, you know, they get to the playoffs and lose in round one, like, that everybody's going to hate him and say, go bye-bye and, like, go away? No, doesn't mean that at all. But
we're talking about the most to gain. We're not talking about who's on a hot seat or
staying positive here. Right.
Yeah.
They win the whole thing. And, you know, they're going to be preseason top 3, 4, 5, whatever, because of the quarterback returning and where they were a year ago. Go win the thing and go win the whole deal and you're in a whole other level.
The thing I love about that is not only does he have the most to gain, probably financially too, because he's not on that list we talked about. And Ryan Day skyrocketed up that list. So literally the most to gain. You go win a championship, and them dollars start adding up quick.
He's not even in the top 10.
No, but you go win a championship, you're going to be well in that top 10, and you're going to be making that money. So, Brent's got Penn State. I think Penn State fans should be optimistic. You took that next step. Now, I think people are going to naturally talk all this offseason about the draw was pretty good.
Yes.
But
and you didn't
but now
beat
DC, OC, quarterback back. This is a squad that you feel like should take that next step, which, you know, which means you need to win more, which you were pretty dang good. You made it to the daggum final four.
Yep.
So hey, that was my list. I got a text from Wes and said we have a Rich Rod comment in the chat. So I feel like we have to have that for somebody.
Oh, I mean, he has the most to gain just by showing back up and making by making West Virginia fun again. I'm in because they've been boring for.
In case y'all don't know this, Brent went to West Virginia.
I'm from West Virginia.
Proud guy from there. Dude knows
about. Go to school there, but I'm from there.
Noel Devine and Slayton and all those guys and the glory days. Yep. He used to have so much pride. He used to paint his chest and go to the games and we got some great pictures. He was bald then too. It's amazing. The hair wasn't there, but just. Proud West by God Virginia guy. And
hey, if they're fun again, I'm in. That's and I think they at least will be fun again and interesting.
All right, next Tuesday, I think we'll get Jesse Palmer. I think we got to get Jesse because let me tell you something. One of the absolute best storytellers I've ever met, and he's got a gazillion of them. Like he is. Like we literally need to call it like story time with Jesse Palmer because he's got
from which world, by the way, from the football world or from the his offseason world that's on TV.
I mean, we can go The Bachelor, we can go
Roses,
the Giants, we can go Spurrier, we can go commentating. I promise you, he's going to tell you a story about me in the Arizona State the day before the Arizona State game with Todd Graham and something I said to him that will. Absolutely make you laugh, and you're gonna know that it's true because you know me, and like I'll say whatever comes to the top of the mind, but Jesse will further cement it, and it was absolutely hilarious. I mean, he was so good. So good. And there's Brent Rollins.
That's me in like 15 years.
that's Brent Rollins right there. So we'll see you guys next week.
I'll dress that up.
We'll come up with some good stuff and some story time with Jesse and talk some more college football because I'm sure by then somebody will be fired as an OC or a DC and there'll be plenty to talk about. So we'll see you guys next week. Hit the rate, like, subscribe, whatever that thing is, and you can find us in all the places where podcasts are. We appreciate you joining us.